Welcome to our last of the very important patient peer-to-peer sharing calls. Today we will be discussing infections related to dialysis. My name is Debbie Ulm. I'm the ESRD program manager with QSource ESRD Network 12. And on behalf of the network staff and the Patient Advisory Council, I would like to thank you for calling in today. During today's VIP call, you'll be hearing from several of our Patient Advisory Council members who will share their experiences with infection and infection prevention. We will begin by having them each introduce themselves, and then we will open it up for questions. The phone lines are currently muted to limit background noise, as we are recording the call to be made available later to the public. So please be aware of this when sharing any personal information when asking a question. When we open up the lines for questions, we ask that you mute your personal phone, and you can do that just using the option on your phone, or you can dial *6 to mute your line, and then if you want to talk again, you can push *6 again, and that will unmute your line. So, I am going to turn it over. Let's have Barbara Briggs, if you want to introduce yourself. Are you there, Barbara?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay, I must have been on mute. Okay, this is Barbara Briggs. I'm from Omaha, Nebraska. And I've been with the PAC 3 years, I believe.
Okay. Thanks, Barbara. How about Jeremy?
Jeremy Mafalich. I've been in in-centered dialysis now for 10 years.
Okay. Thank you for being here, Jeremy. How about Mark?
Hi, this is Mark Johnson. I've been with the PACS for the past 3 years. I've been on dialysis for the past 10 and have experienced each three of the modalities.
Okay. And Mike, were you able to join us?
Yes, I'm on. My name's Mike Bronson. I'm from Tonganoxie, Kansas, and I've had kidney disease since 1985 and had a transplant on October 27th, 2009, so it's almost my transplant anniversary.
That's awesome. Happy early transplant anniversary.
Thank you.
Well, thank you all for being on the line today. I am going to go ahead and unmute everybody else's line that is on the phone. So if you have questions, please feel free to ask them now. We've had a vast amount of experience with different types of infections, some directly related to dialysis, some not so directly related to dialysis, but these are kind of your patient experts here, so feel free to keep those questions coming in.
The conference is now in talk mode.
So does anybody out there have any questions for our panelists? Until we get some questions, I would like to start out. I had some pretty harsh infections, bloodstream infections that have really affected you in several different ways. If one of you kind of wants to share your experience with, you know, we talk a lot about sepsis, or you hear sepsis that's starting to kind of come in play with having that kind of being a buzzword, having it being something that people are talking about. So if one of you wants to talk about your experience with sepsis and how you know, how you got sepsis and what the treatment was, what are some of the signs of that you can share with people?
Okay, my name is Barbara Briggs, and I had sepsis. I didn't know I had sepsis, but one of the signs was I was always having a fever. And when I went to dialysis, they sent me to emergency because my fever was so high. I went home, and then I had to go back that night because it had escalated to another whole level. And they did several tests. They couldn't find what was wrong with me, or they couldn't find the infection. And finally, they found it in my intestines. It was sepsis. And I worked with small children at Educare, and the doctor said I possibly contacted it from one of the children, but I eventually had to wear one of those bags, a colonoscopy, I don't know what it's called. I think it's a colonoscopy bag, but I had to wear that for 3 months, and I didn't like that very well. But they treated me with some antibiotics, and I still went to dialysis. And when I went to dialysis, everyone around me had to wear a mask and a gown, and I had to kind of sit in an isolated area. But eventually they got rid of it, thank goodness.
This is Mark Johnson.
Go ahead,
yeah, this is Mark. The first time I had sepsis was probably within 6 months after I started dialysis. My fistula hadn't developed yet, and I was using a heart catheter. And I took a weekend trip down to New Orleans, and somehow I got, and my catheter became infected. I didn't realize it. I was on the plane, and I felt very cold and feverish. And when I finally got back to the unit that next Monday, they said, Mark, you've got an infection. And so I went into the hospital, and I had developed sepsis. It was like a couple weeks worth of antibiotics, very strong antibiotics. And over the course of several years, I've gotten sepsis a number of times. My signs are my legs start to swell, especially when I had cellulitis attacks. I get very feverish, I'd sit underneath a furnace outlet just to keep the chills from keeping me from doing stuff. Over the years, I've learned that I need to make sure I have an antibiotic on hand so that when I start feeling the symptoms, I can quick start doing a week's worth of that. And that has kept me out of the hospital the last 4 or 5 years.
And Mark, I absolutely agree that, you know, with what we as patients have to deal with, it is wise to have extra antibiotics on hand to help stop it, or at least try to get ahead of it, try to slow it down. To keep you out of the hospital, I think it's vitally important to have something for these purposes to keep you out of the hospital. I mean, that's the whole goal of what antibiotics are for, is to cure the problem, but also to keep you out of the hospital. And that's something that we have to learn, as patients, that the antibiotics are good to get you back to healthy, but they're also to keep you out of the hospital.
And I can come at it from a little different perspective. I'm a transplant patient, but I've had sepsis 4 times because I had to have a subclavian catheter inserted for plasmapheresis because of the recurrence of my kidney disease. And that catheter got infected 4 times, and each time the symptoms were flu-like. And if you feel like you get flu-like symptoms, I would urge you to go to the emergency room immediately, because in all 4 times with me, I went from being completely lucid to 45 minutes later needing a wheelchair to be able to get out of a car. So being immunosuppressed, I had nothing to stop the spread of the sepsis. So even transplant patients can get sepsis.
Well, I've been lucky. I haven't gotten it anymore. I did quit my job at the Educare.
I also think, Barbara, I think you actually touched on something that's vitally important, is that, you know, you really have to pay attention when you go out to where you go and, you know, the people that are around. You have to pay attention to if you hear somebody cough or somebody sneeze, you know, it sounds bad that we're trying to, I guess, put in a box, I guess. But, I mean, if somebody's coughing, I mean, did they just have something in their throat, or do they actually have a cold, and do I need to stay away from that person?
Well, I was careful about hugging, because my church people like to hug, and I just told them I just can't hug you.
And then all dialysis and patients and transplant patients need to understand we do have a lower threshold when it comes to infection. And when you go to the hospital and you think you have an infection, you need to identify yourself right away as a dialysis patient or a transplant patient.
Right.
Yeah, that's correct.
Those are all great points. Something, you know, that we talk about a lot is advocating for yourself, and I think all of those things, kind of knowing what things to stay away from, being able to verbalize to other people what your needs are, and, you know, especially if you're, you know, anytime you're going to the hospital or, you know, having to call the doctor's office, letting them know that you do have end-stage renal disease or you do have a transplant and, you know, thinking that you might have some type of infection will hopefully get people to move a little bit faster and get you treated instead of having you have to wait. You know, when we talk about the in-center dialysis facility, one of the things we do with our bloodstream infection reduction project is sometimes the patients in the facility will do hand hygiene audits. I was kind of curious if anybody has done those in the facility or, you know, what might you do if you see a nurse or a PCT that, you know, isn't washing their hands or isn't utilizing their gloves or other precautions that are, you know, should be taken in the dialysis facility.
Debbie, can I speak to that? Even though I'm not on dialysis, I've gone through about 150 plasmapheresis treatments, and when I feel well, I can advocate for myself easily, but when I don't feel well, I become very passive, and I've seen things happen that I knew I should have said something about but was afraid to do it. And so I've had to tell myself, regardless of how reluctant you are to be that person, you still need to be able to speak up and politely say, can I ask you about how you just washed your hands? Can I ask you about how long you just cleaned the area around my catheter? And I made the mistake of not doing that before, and I think that might have been, a problem one time that I was hospitalized, maybe twice, so. I really encourage you to advocate for yourself and ask for the hand hygiene audit or whatever the situation might warrant.
Mike, I'm going to piggyback on that and say, you know, you're a prime example. If you are sick and you can't get around very well and you are so weak that you're having, you know, and it's like your situation, you're in a wheelchair, your support group needs to be your voice. Whether it be your friends, whether it be your family, wife, husband, whoever, they need to speak up and be your voice loud. I mean, you know, you need to get people's attention of, hey, you know, this is this situation, you know, or this person, you know, this person is a dialysis patient.
Right, but let me add this. It's important to be polite and civil because everybody that's dealing with you, they've got their own problems. So I've found that if you're kind and civil, sometimes you have to be firm, but if you're kind to people, they'll generally respond in kind.
Absolutely. But it is very important to make sure that you stress when you see somebody not practice good hygiene, that you have to say something, as everyone has said. I just listened to a webinar from CDC last hour on hand hygiene, and over 40% of hospital staff do not practice good hygiene.
Wow.
Yeah, that's an amazing number. I didn't know that.
You have to remember that for staff, whether it's in a dialysis unit or in the hospital, it becomes routine for them. So it's easy to skip steps.
Yeah.
So for those of you that have done home dialysis, what are some things you might have to be aware of at home specifically?
When you're go ahead, Bella.
When you're doing home dialysis, I always kept a bottle of Clorox wipes. And I wiped off all the surfaces, wiped off my equipment, and I took alcohol and wiped around the site. And I made sure all of my vents were closed in the room that I was doing it in. And I made sure my hands were washed. And then I put my gloves on, and then I started the process. But if you miss one of those steps, you can easily get an infection. And I was very careful. I carried those Clorox wipes with me everywhere.
Barbara, you were a lot better than I was. When I was doing peritoneal, I was by myself, and I will admit it, I started skipping steps, saying, well, I don't have to clean this surface off today. I'll do it tomorrow. Well, after two bouts of peritonitis, I learned my lesson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I would just echo that. I was on peritoneal dialysis, and the renal nurse will go through every single step, and some of it may seem a little too detailed. Every single step is important, but the good news is that once you go through every single step for several days, it becomes somewhat routine, and then after a while, you've got it down, but you can't cheat. If you're supposed to wash your hands for 45 seconds under running water, don't do it for 30 seconds. Do it for 45 seconds. It has to be 100% adherence to the guidelines there, to the rules, really, I should say, that they give you.
When I started peritoneal, I was still working, and they let me use the lactation room at my job. And so, you know, not knowing who was there before me, I really wiped that place down.
Is there anyone on the line that has a question? For any of you all that are doing in-center dialysis, has your clinic done any kind of activities that have helped promote infection prevention? Is that something that you hear about from your facilities or?
At my clinic, we talk about it regularly. We make sure to have it up on center boards and on whiteboards. It's placed over where you weigh yourself when you come in. It's put over the wash basin itself. It's something that we try to really patients into that when you come in here, you please need to be either wash your hands now or make sure that you are clean going in. That way, to help prevent the spread of the infection.
And that includes making sure that if you've got a cold or flu, that you wear a mask. And our unit is very good at making sure that that happens.
Yeah, we also talk a lot about, and part of our project for bloodstream infection reduction is the reduction of dialysis catheters. So does anybody have an experience they can talk about with that, or if they started with a dialysis catheter and eventually received a fistula, or does anybody have any experience with that?
Four catheters, three infections, until my fistula finally developed. I don't want to go back to catheter ever.
Fortunate enough to only one catheter. I had one catheter for 3 months, and I was sick every single month. I make sure that my fistula is running. I make sure that it's strong. And I use the same that I've had for 10 years. So, I take it, you know, you get sick 3 months in a row, well, you don't want to go back to that because it's not any fun.
So what I hear you saying is that catheters are part of the problem with infections. Is that true?
Yes, that is definitely true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people, you know, when we talk about bloodstream infections, you know, they are thinking that the issue is with catheters, and a lot of times it is, but, you know, we also talked about with this group about other ways that, you know, you talked about having it maybe through the daycare that you worked at. I think one of you had said something about even having like an ingrown hair close to your access, and you know, being able to, you know, scratch that, or, you know, even something as it seems very not dangerous, but something like that.
I took it for granted that you know, it's just an ingrown hair, it's not going to do anything, you know, and I get, you know, just casually did what I normally do, and it infected my site. And, you know, I had to receive 9 rounds of vancomycin to kill it off. So, my mistake, I won't do that again.
Are there any questions or comments, thoughts that people have about infection or preventing infection at the facility or with home dialysis?
This is Dee Dee. I wonder what y'all experience has been with vaccinations. Getting the flu vaccination and pneumonia, particularly.
I personally get it every year. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say I get the flu shot every year, and I know there's a lot of concern about that. I read some things, but I think it's important to get vaccinated. I've gotten it every year, and I like to say it this way. There's two kinds of flu, so-called flu. There's the flu where I don't feel good. But when you get the real flu and you're in bed for 2 weeks and, I've had that kind of flu once, you want to get your flu shot. And if possible, if the people who are around you live in the same home as you, they need to get the flu shot as well. It's a very serious thing.
Yeah, our unit is in the process of giving out flu shots. So I haven't gotten mine yet because apparently there's a order in which they give them. I'm sort of at the bottom of the list, but I'll be getting mine within the next week.
That same as me. I'll get mine sometime this week.
Mike, I think you had a really good point in, you know, asking the people around you to be vaccinated as well, so that, you know, they're not just protecting themselves, but protecting your health as well, being, you know, that you have a lowered immune system and can be a lot more susceptible to that. So I think that's a good point, too. So what advice might you all give for new patients? If somebody is new to dialysis, what are some things that they can do if they are in-center, kind of their routine of coming into the facility, washing their hands, washing their access, what kinds of things you wish you maybe would have done or would have known more about to prevent some of those infections?
I think you hit it head on the nail right there. I think get in a routine before you leave to go to dialysis or when you get to dialysis to wash your hand, wash your access. You know, just get in that routine of making sure it's clean, making sure that when you step in there, that they have a clean spot to access, and just if you do go out, you know, kind of pay attention to your surroundings and wash your hands adequately, and just be active. You know, don't be afraid to wash your hands as frequently as possible. Or carry around the Clorox wipes like Barbara said.
And I think there's an assumption also that everybody knows how to wash their hands properly. Well, that's not the case. So when you start in the unit, ask the staff, hey, can you show me how I should wash my hands properly?
Absolutely.
And it kind of the same goes, I guess, for home dialysis. So any patients that are new to home dialysis, I know, Barbara, you mentioned a few things that you tried to do with your surroundings, but is there any tips or tricks for home dialysis patients to stay infection-free?
Well, just like I said, make sure everything is sanitized before you start to hook yourself up, your hands, everything.
Are there any other questions, thoughts? Parting words of wisdom.
Just be very wary about infection and sepsis because, and you know, you want to be, keep yourself, you know, clean at all times, for lack of a better word. You can't wash your hands too much. And I don't want to create an atmosphere of paranoia, but you want to look at your site very carefully. You always want to inspect that. I know when I had the catheter in my chest, I had to wear a face mask every time. Don't fail to do that. You just want to be sure to realize that your life could be on the line, so you want to take every precaution possible. And when in doubt, reach out. Reach out to people in your clinic or if possible. I mean, I don't want to create unnecessary emergency room visits, but if you're feeling feverish and weak, time is of the essence, so you would want to get to the emergency room. So just be vigilant, and as long as you're vigilant and follow the rules, as a general rule, things will work out okay.
Right.
you have to realize it's your life at stake. So whether you're doing it at home or whether you're at the unit, you've got to just speak up for yourself.
I think that's all great advice. Anything else before we get off the call here?
No, I don't have anything.
I think we covered a lot there.
Yes, we did. So, Jeremy, Mark, Barbara, and Mike, I appreciate your time on the call. And as always, if anybody has any questions or wants to talk with any of the staff here, you can reach out to us here at the office at 816-880-9990. And we're here to answer any of your questions. So we wish you a great day, and thanks again to our panelists for sharing your stories and your insights. And we will talk to you all soon.
Thanks for participating.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.